and Operations Subcommittee meeting for July 6, 2021, 4 o'clock p.m. Before we get started with the meeting, Open Meetings Act, a copy of the Open Meetings Act under Nebraska Revised State Statute 8414 through 8414-07 through 8414-14 is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. Prior to turning to the agenda for today's meeting, I would like to announce the procedure that will be used for this meeting. With respect to each agenda item, the director will first hear staff proposals and recommendations. Then the public will be given an opportunity to speak to the item. Lastly, the director will discuss the item and take action. And we ask that the public not interrupt the director's discussion and action. Thank you. Quorum call.
Teaser.
Collar.
Here.
Jack.
Here.
Savinsky.
Here.
Chairperson.
Here. Item number four, adoption of the agenda.
So move.
Second.
Roll call.
Collar.
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Teaser?
Yes.
And Chairperson?
Hi. We have proof of publication of tonight's meeting and will become part of the permanent record. Item number six, review and recommendation of Water Sustainability Fund application for West Papillion Regional Basin 4. Lori?
Can you go to the map, please, Chris? Good afternoon. As we just discussed, we're continuously looking for funding for the programs and the projects that we do, especially in the Papio watershed. As John mentioned, we're behind. The partnership wasn't started before development, so we're always trying to play catch up. So the WP4 project was in the implementation plan for 2019 to 2024 for the Papillion Creek Watershed Partnership, which is part of the interlocal agreement that's approved by this board and all of the other governing bodies of the partnership members. And so WP4 is located at approximately 204th and Schramm Road. Schramm Road currently dead ends into 204th Street here. It will eventually connect through here. And so we do have a 60% design on this, and in May we issued the contract to HDR and JEO to do the final design and anticipating starting construction next spring. So we have applied for a FEMA grant for this project under the new program Building Resilient Infrastructure and Communities. There was $500 million available, but they got about $3 billion in applications. So we were not successful. This little tiny project did not get funded. And so we had already started developing a water sustainability fund application to help with the final costs. The total project right now estimate is $14.8 million. We have purchased about a third of the land that we need for this project and plus the preliminary design. So we anticipate that the rest of the project will be about $13 million. We do have a few aspects that we are hoping to partner with on with Sarpy County and the City of Gretna, the first being Schramm Road. So this will be the access area into the recreation park. For now. It's not currently a road. It's a farm access. And we would also, so there, that would be a water quality basin. So rather than a small culvert and a small earthen embankment, we are proposing to put in all of the grading work for the future build out of Schramm Road. So Sarpy County would contribute that. We estimate that to be about a total of $1 million that they would contribute. We're still working on interlocal agreements, so that's not final yet. And the other thing, if you can scroll down just a little bit, is this sanitary sewer line. And this would be a cost to the City of Gretna. This is the Lakeview subdivision. As you can see, it's just now starting to build out. They would eventually want to connect it into sewer lines on this side of the creek. And so this is the other water quality basin planned for this reservoir. And they are proposing to go ahead and put in a stub line so that they don't have to come back in and disturb the water quality basin at the time it's needed for this piece when it develops. We're also seeking funding from Nebraska Game and Parks to help with establishing the fisheries and the recreational access. And so I have a table in the memo, if you can go back to that, please. So it's a little bit complicated here, kind of looking at all of the different partners and the different shares that we anticipate getting. Again, nothing is final here. We're still working on that final design and interlocal agreements with Game and Parks, Gretna, and Sarpy County. But we anticipate that the total amount we would request from the Water Sustainability Fund is $7.7 million. And so tonight we are asking that the board authorize the general manager to submit the application. And I can answer any questions.
Thank you, Lori. We can have a motion on this item.
Move with staff recommendation.
Got a motion?
Second.
Is anyone in the public wish to speak to the item? Directors?
Director? The question I have, Lori, is when will we know, roughly?
When did it? November?
For sure April, because they don't vote until after the...
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. Yeah. All right, thanks.
Next year.
Yeah. Any other questions? Roll call.
Jeff?
Yes.
Zabinski?
Yes.
Zizek?
Yes.
Tyler?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye. Item number 7, review and recommendation of the Big Papio Levy Culverts Phase 2 Ram Construction Contract Change Order Number 6. Martin Cleveland.
Thank you. We have some good news on this project. The project is essentially done. So near the end of a project, we always try to do a last change order to wrap up the decreases, increases in items that occurred during the project and to just basically clean up the overall project quantities. And so this change order is number 6 in this particular project. We actually had spent in change orders up to this point $302,000, and so this would be additional $31,000 of change order expense. Unfortunately, what that does is it bumps us over the 10% limit that the policy calls for board action. So we're here tonight to ask for the board to approve this change order to allow this last change to occur in this project. So the total would be, it would make this total change amount would be $334,020, and so it would be in terms of overall cost. This last change order is nothing, but it's just fact we're over the board policy of 10%. So tonight I have with me Lindy Rogers from FIRA. Can help explain the change order if there's any questions. But essentially, this is like a cleanup change order. The last point in the project, you do a change order, and you hope that it's always under the 10%. We get to that point, but this particular project wasn't quite that lucky. It's over 10%, so here tonight to bring it to you. We think overall the change orders that have occurred to this point have been for things that are valid, certainly valid issues that on structures that we discovered as we did the work. You always find things that you don't anticipate on an old structure. Structures are all about 40 years old, and so there's a lot of hidden things that you get into when you do a project like this. So overall, the project's been great. We've 17 structures in 2 counties, and the district is in compliance with the Corps' requirements on 8499, which is important. As John mentioned, in 2019, we've acquired about $30 million worth of federal assistance through the various projects we had impacted by the flood. So it's really important that we keep them in good shape. Anyway, probably enough explanation. Happy to answer any questions you have on it. And certainly Linda can help me as well if anything that's more complicated that I can't answer.
Thank you very much. Well, we can have a motion.
A motion for staff recommendation.
Second.
Anyone in the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Snitsky?
Yes.
Keezer?
Yes.
Fowler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye. Item number Eight, review and recommendation of Water Sustainability Fund grant application for the Papio, Missouri NRD IMP Water Quality Monitoring Project. Paul Woodard.
All right, good evening. This will be another Water Sustainability Fund grant application. We've, in the last couple budgets, we've had some proposed money in there from a grant to help us cost share with landowners on flow meters. So back in 2018, we did adopt a policy where we would require flow meters on all basically irrigation wells or high capacity wells in what we call the hydrologically connected area. So part of our RMP, if you go to the map real quick, Kurt's second page there, go down, scroll down to the bottom. So the IMP there is everything that drains to the Platte and Elkhorn River, and then the shaded areas is called the hydrologically connected area. This may eventually expand, but basically there's around 270 irrigation wells in that area. So if you go back up to the memo real quick, we currently have a policy to cost share 50% on those. So it's actually quite an investment by both parties there. If you're looking at what the landowner would have to expend and what we would have to expend as well, could be up to $270,000. And we had the requirement at 5 years till March of 2023, but the flood really impacted, you know, all those people. It wasn't quite the right time to send out a letter saying, hey, we got to get flow meters. And so we didn't actually send one out till the beginning of this year. So when our policy comes back up, we're doing some changes later here and maybe in October, we should look at extending that date or something. I guess right now the goal is just to see if we can get an application prepared and submitted. So what we're asking for here would be to get some Water Sustainability Fund grant dollars to help pay for part of that cost, up for 60% of the local share. So we would currently look at around $900 per meter from the fund. And then the NRD cost share would be $600. And it's about 50-50 still, the cost share between the NRD and the landowner, given those different costs. So it would be what they call a smaller grant, not above $250,000. And we would try to implement that over the time period that we have, say the next 4 years, to extend that time frame for landowners to get these meters in, because it is kind of a time-consuming thing, both for them to – the landowner would hire a person to come out and put it in. The district would have administrative costs to do all the financial handling. We would also have costs potentially coming up that once they get these meters installed, the expectation is they would basically be responsible for providing – whatever they used for that year, they'd have to report that back to us. So we'd like to make a online, more easily accessible reporting thing, which can be done. We've been doing similar stuff with our irrigated acres here lately. And then, yeah, I guess in the long term, down the road, if we want these to still be telling us accurate information, they have to be tested every so often, probably every 5 years, and there could be maintenance required on them. So It's a future investment, but you know, one that we're being consistent basically with other NRDs in the area, and you can't manage what you don't measure is what somebody once told me. So, all right, any questions? Yeah.
Are we behind on this as far as other NRDs are doing this extensively, like in central Nebraska, where there's massive amounts of irrigation? They're doing this already.
We are a little bit. It's a little hit and miss. Like Lower Elkhorn has already went through this. They got a Water Sustainability Fund grant to do all wells in their district. Some districts I talked with several to get kind of an idea. Central Platte, you know, they're not going to go ahead and mandate meters on every well because that would be 21,000 wells.
Yeah.
So they're doing more of a where they'll pick. I think they have 70 to 100. Farms out there, and they actually have their own metering, but also measuring precipitation, all that stuff, everything that goes into it, so they can get a whole idea of you pumped out this much, the crop used this. Some of it was actually returned in the ground to the groundwater again after you used it. Hopefully, by most of our requirements, none of it runs off. So there is different programs out there. But when we're talking about 270 wells, we're at a lot more manageable size than some of those areas. But yeah, in other areas where it's a mandate, because they're going to in the future use this as part of their regulations, right? You put on 5 inches this year and 3 inches the next. Did you go over your allocation? There it's something where it's critical because it's part of the requirements.
Is there an allocation ahead of time on how much they can use, or is it just based on the water levels at that time?
Well, right now, I think in some of the areas, based on water levels and where they're at in the overused areas, would be fully appropriated or over-appropriated. They have that number already established, and they're monitoring every year what are people putting on. So that is in place right now.
And there's instances areas where they shut down the wells if the water levels aren't high enough. Has that happened?
It hasn't happened yet. It would most likely happen in like the Republican River area where enough flow didn't get to Kansas, and now we have to shut off areas. So yep.
Thanks, Paul. We could have a motion on this item.
I move we go with the staff recommendation.
Have a motion.
Second that.
A second. Anyone in the public wish to speak to the item? Directors? Roll call.
Teaser?
Yes.
Cogler?
Yes.
Jack?
Yes.
Sapinski?
Yes.
And Jefferson?
Aye. Item number 9, review and recommendation to groundwater level monitoring sites joint funding agreement with USGS and amendment to interlocal agreement with Lower Platte North NRD. Again, Paul Woodard.
Good evening. We bring this to you tonight. You've had looks at this in the past. Go down to the map, if you would, Curtis. Go down to the map. It's attached to the agenda there. There you go. Keep going to the third page, I think. We've got 6 wells right now that currently have USGS doing monitoring. And I know we've asked over time, are we going to stop doing that or not? I guess in really looking at programs that other NRDs near us are doing, where they're expanding and having more wells, where they're continuously monitoring the groundwater level, we think we should not only keep the ones we have, but look to expand that. So what this map shows, I don't know if you can zoom out just a little bit, but we have 6 sites. We would currently add 9 others so that we would have not only a view of the aquifer from east to west, but a view of it from north to south. So go back up to the memo there real quick. In what we've been doing, so I did talk to several other NRDs that have ongoing continuous groundwater level recording programs. They have as many as 50 to 46 different levels or different wells that they're doing. Keep going down. So at this time, we did work with USGS to put together a proposal. Keep going to the next page. Of the costs and what it would take to do this. So the Lower Platte North would have 2 of these gauges in there. District, so we'd work with them to amend the interlocal agreement that we already have. They're currently paying like $2,200 a year for the one that they have. So after we do this first year, the FY22 total you see there, our district would be at $51,000. They'd be at $6,400 to do that, and USGS is actually putting in a little bit more than they normally could, around 36% cost share for this year. So that helps us get the equipment. That's part of this first cost is getting the equipment and then also the maintenance for this year. And then after that, we go back to the typical. Right now we're paying around $10,400. So this is what that would go up to on a yearly basis to keep all those going. And I guess the other real reason we've looked at, I did go through and see what other prices were, but if you assume like we bought the actual equipment and tried to do this ourselves, the equipment is over 50% of the cost. And then just the way that USGS is able to maintain all of these for us, you know, that would be within the realm of like 50% labor. So it doesn't make sense for us to really say, hey, we're going to buy our own equipment and do our own work because – anytime something, we would have these on an internet site, so we would know if they go out, but you'd have to go out there, replace the, you'd have to have backup equipment already ready to go, which would cost extra money, things like that. So that's, it just didn't seem to pan out if we looked at both of those items. So anyway, I did have one other graph to kind of show you what I mean by why, if you only had a couple points during the year, what that would be. Go ahead to that one, Curtis. So what this graph is showing us is right at Waterloo, right next to Elkhorn River. The blue is the actual water elevation in the river that we get from the gauge there. The orangish color is the level in the groundwater in the aquifer right next to the river. So most of the year, if we're above, this is a subtraction of the two. If we're above this line, the aquifer is providing water into the river. And this helps us with all of our modeling, kind of knowing all this information. Whenever, say, a rainfall or peak would go by in the river goes up higher than the groundwater, and some water's put back into the aquifer when that happens. And that's shown here on these graphs, too. So it gives us a really good indication about what is happening. When is that river receiving water? When is it losing water, potentially, to the groundwater? And this all becomes very important when we try to get a model that tells us accurate results. Okay.
Thanks, Paul.
Thank you.
We can have a motion to this on this item.
Question. Okay, Paul. I saw it. How does that help us? And the reason I ask that, we have, for example, 3,000 center pivots in Lower Elkhorn. And if they suck the aquifer down 10 foot, that would eventually probably have some influence on us down here, on our aquifer. But how does that help us down here?
Yeah. From that example, like the measurement of it, it's typically going to have most of the impact on the river itself. And so when we get down to here, it's important. So we don't necessarily have to model how much water they're taking away from our groundwater between the two districts. It would be more important to understand if they deplete the river by this amount, how's that going to affect our aquifer? And that's kind of what this helps tell us is all the time, because in between time, there is a lot of pumping and stuff that goes on during the summer. And without something like that, you don't know how the groundwater table reacts. It might go down 2 feet. It might go down 8 feet. It's good to know that. And then that helps us understand our local impacts too. You know, we're not going to have nearly as much impact as, say, 10,000 acres somewhere else. But we do have some. I think we have, I guess from that example, we would have quite a bit. We still have, we're estimating right now that that area in red, that was, go to that second map if you would, that we currently have just in that area probably 24,000 irrigated acres ourselves. So Lower Elkhorn is going to be more like 100,000, something like that. But yeah, it's all kind of relative. Okay. Sorry if that helps.
Okay. Well, before we proceed, can we have a motion on this item?
Maybe not.
Committee,
but yeah,
from
yeah.
It must be from a committee.
I'll motion for staff recommendation.
Okay, we got a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second for discussion purposes.
Okay, anyone from the public wish to speak to the item? Not rest of the director, I think Mr. Bradley, and then director.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, you had made the comment USGS may be contributing more this year than previous. Do we know if their overall budget has increased lately?
I think it's just a funding that wasn't used up within their federal budget, their current federal budget. So I don't know. They don't think they got an increase. I think it's just maybe some other project fell through or something happened there.
And then just a comment. I really highly encourage the PPO committee to vote in favor of this project, to advance it to the full body for Thursday. Thank you.
Director Jett?
We already have six of these monitoring stations, right?
Yes.
Are we saying that six isn't enough? That we're going to find out a massive amount of information with more of the same, or just what, they're not in the right spot?
Yeah, I think just the geographic coverage is what the difference is. Like I said, we kind of have them positioned right now just to see what happens east to west between the two rivers. We're missing a whole bunch of what happens north of that and what happens south of that. We do have like maybe 10 to 12 wells out there that we do still go out and get manual readings twice a year. But that just tells us if we've held steady or dropped a little or whatever.
How many?
Try 12.
12 more?
We have 12 other wells that we go get a single reading or one to two readings a year. Yeah.
Okay.
Director Thompson.
Thank you. The top of your page 2 of your memo says there is additional need within our NRD. And you mentioned the Lord Elkhorn, they got 50. My first impression, oh, we're in a contest. They got 50, we only have six. I'm lost when you say it's good to know the groundwater depletes. If the center pivots are going crazy, well, then what happens? What do we, if it models that it's depleting, what action or inaction, what happens then? Do we, can we do anything, or we just, okay, it depleted, and then what?
No, yeah, through our groundwater management plan, we'd have the rules to go to a second phase if groundwater levels depleted by that much. And it's an important part of our groundwater management plan. I guess the other part where it's important is that the when we put in a new well or do something new, we're using estimates currently from the Department of Natural Resources as to what impact that well potentially has. And the reason we're going to try to update the modeling is because we feel in quite a few areas that's inaccurate. We're being maybe charged too much on that end. So actually knowing these groundwater levels, and it helps say that maybe the impact of doing some new irrigation, you know, maybe Valmont expands, whatever happens out there in that area or that corridor, that we're basically not being charged or held too much held against us for doing that. Like, is it really having that much impact on the rivers? Because gauge data would show that it's not. We're currently holding steady or going up.
Okay, what's having impact, whether it's center pivot irrigation or drought or whatever? I mean, and then what happens? I mean, we react to, you know, God and nature and all that good stuff, but spending more money for these, I'm a little bit fuzzy on it. Help convince me, because I'm not convinced.
Yeah. It's the going into the next, we would like to avoid going into phase two of our groundwater management actions, because that would put more responsibilities back on private landowners.
But you're saying phase two says you can't irrigate.
Or you could be restricted as to what you irrigate. Or we couldn't expand. Stop on expansion.
Yeah. Well, Paul, how does this relate to the fully appropriated, over-appropriated? So, I mean, having the data could keep you out of one of those designations.
Yeah. So right now we're not fully appropriated.
Right. Or over.
And that's part of the numbers we have through our integrated management plan that say you could develop this much area is intended to keep us under those restrictions. I guess in theory, if we had an extended long period of drought, we wouldn't be able to meet those. So this also, yeah, you're right, this helps also understand what happens during drought conditions. Because right now we don't know if our rivers went drier than normal, quite a bit drier than normal, how much water is going to leave that aquifer. It's pretty amazing how much water in that aquifer feeds the rivers.
You'd mentioned we have 10 to 12 in addition to the 6. Are those spread out above and below?
Yeah, I mean, go to that map again.
But you don't have to show me the map. So
they're spread out.
So you're saying we want to contract.
If you go north up to Arlington and if you go south down past.
But you don't trust the manual readings? Or what?
Well, we don't get enough of them. We only know what happens. I mean, it's just a point on that map a year.
You don't get enough quantity, but you get enough data to help in the decision.
Yeah, on a long-term basis, it tells you what happens over the long term. But the reason for this continuous data is because a model doesn't run on one year numbers, I guess is a good point.
Can you drive out there twice a year and get it?
And we do. We go twice a year, usually.
Okay.
But that's kind of at the beginning of the growing season or irrigation at the end of irrigation. Most of the time, under normal circumstances, it's rebounded. I'll go to that curve again. But you can see that it comes back every year after going down. You know, summer months would pull it down. Rainfalls and high river levels would bring it back up. So that's the continuous part of that is it's hard to relate that with 2 points.
Paul, well, one of the things that kind of concerns me, our district is one of the smallest users of center pivots. You know, so it's not a hell of a lot out there because we're so built up. Is there any way that I'm going back to 2008 when the river was running about 2,200 cubic feet a second, you know, during the drought, 2008, 2010 in there. In the summer, you know, we had virtually just a trickle going down the Platte. If that happens again and we lose water in an aquifer, is there a way for us to force the Columbus NRDs and the Lower Loop NRDs to reduce their consumption to help us out?
Right now there's not a set regulatory way for us to force them to do that. I think through the current way we're all working together in the coalition, that would happen. That would come up as a, you know, we've been adding some acres, but they've also been adding acres under our current agreements over the last several years.
And we're just adding minimal acreage.
Minimal acres, yeah. It would come back to them saying that, you know, we've gone too far or we need to back up. And so, yeah, that through DNR, that could be regulated or required. But
has that happened?
No, and we wouldn't know how it affected our aquifer if it did happen. I mean, to say that the river has gone down to 2,200 CFS doesn't tell me how much the whole groundwater system.
It's interesting you say that because when the river was running 2,200, I still had creeks, spring-fed creeks running. You know, they didn't, that's a, yeah, away from the river at all.
It'll take a little bit longer period of time, and then those will drop too, and all of a sudden we won't have some water in those. I mean, that's the effect too. Our groundwater is really close to the surface through this.
We went 6 years with a drought there, didn't we?
Yeah. Director Bradley?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Paul, I was wondering, and sort of know this one, but how much development or big business has been going on in this area, you know, in the last decade or so? That big water users, are they, yeah, is that increasing?
I wouldn't say there's much industrial increase with Costco gets fed by Fremont. So there is, like, there's been expansion of municipal needs that happened when Fremont wanted to expand, and they did. But also, you know, MUD's expanded to a large point. And part of what Lower Platte North currently does is monitors really closely around the well field for that the impact that MUD has had. And actually, several of the wells I've shown on that map are MUD's observation wells that they don't currently have a long-term. They've taken some manual readings, too, over time, but they don't have a long-term thing. So it's not like we're going out and drilling all new wells to do this monitoring. There's several monitoring wells out there that we would be using.
And just another point, Paul, and you can say if I'm inaccurate, but I think a lot of this started when the whole integrated management plan started and people started getting the full appropriate or over appropriate designation. The data or the models generated by the DNR were not necessarily the best or accurate. And so I would think areas were getting improperly analyzed. And so I think you see a lot of the districts kind of pick up their monitoring and data collection to have assurances that decisions weren't being imposed upon them that weren't entirely based in accurate data or science. And so I would almost say that this could be looked at as an insurance policy, that if further restrictions are being proposed or implemented, that one, the data is correct, and that two, we have an argument either for or against whatever those restrictions may be implemented. I hope I said that PC enough. But is that accurate?
Yeah.
It wasn't. Yeah. We were getting decisions that weren't entirely correct.
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions?
I just had a question because this data gathering effort has been going on for quite a few years now. We did the first six or so out west Maple, and I remember you coming before the board when we started that. Your whole goal was to track the groundwater coming off the river flowing east and figure out how much was moving through the area and at what speed and where it was going. And now that you are suggesting these, do you have enough? I know this is just another piece of the puzzle, but how many more are you going to need? Is this going to get us to the answer that you're looking for? What's your final answer? And what's your end game here?
I believe this coverage would be enough for the entire aquifer, the combined aquifer between the Platte and the Elkhorn River we've been looking at. With just the six that we had, we did make some projected estimates as to what was coming from the Platte potentially to the Elkhorn. It's in the USGS report. But really, you do need to know what's happening north to south in order to understand that entire how the groundwater changes in that area and then what might be contributing. Because there might be part of that area that is actually contributing back to the Platte during the summer months. And we just don't know all those breaks. We don't know what's happening at those different times.
Any other questions? Roll call.
Yes.
Jeff?
No.
Spinsby?
No.
Teaser?
No.
And Chairperson.
Aye. That completes my report.
The time is 4:45. We'll call the FBL subcommittee to order. Notification of the Open Meeting Act is posted in the back of the room as well as out in the hallway. With that, quorum call, please.
Bagley?
Here.
Bradley?
Here.
Conley?
Aye.
Here.
Chairperson.
Here. Adoption agenda, please.
So moved. Second.
Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conrad?
Aye.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bagley?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes. I have before me proof of publication of this meeting. Item 6, discussion presentation on bond proposals of the Tapio Reservoirs, right-of-way purchase request, John Winkler and Paul Greger, D.A. Davidson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I invited Paul Greger, who's our bond counsel, and regarding the breakout, we had Paul per the June meeting. I was directed to get some information and so we could generate discussion on various bond proposals. Paul ran those numbers for us, and he's here to answer any questions you might have. Paul, we did put together a sheet that kind of broke out the debt service for $15 million, $20 million, $25 million, and $30 million as you ran them. So this is kind of summary if you want to have that in case you get any questions. That way I didn't provide every scenario or every one that you sent. We just broke them in a summary.
Okay.
As stated kind of during our budget discussion, why we kind of came up with landed on the $25 million. Paul can talk about, obviously, the process and interest rates and kind of what he sees in his crystal ball as far as future rates or financing or whatever question you may have. The debt service, again, is listed on there, and so I would open it up to any questions to Paul or I. Anything?
May I?
Yeah,
what's the debt service on 25? I read the spreadsheet here.
Yeah, so if you go debt service, $25 million, then it says fiscal year 2022. That would be our expected debt service this fiscal year, and then it runs down for the life of the bond.
So we're 4.4 with the $25 million? upper left?
Yeah. Yep.
4.93.
Yep, yep. And then it goes up from there. So.
All right.
Paul, I don't know if you want to structure it. So it's in with our 1 cent limitation. You obviously looked at that. And we had a discussion. I told a little bit about where you see interest rates falling. And I don't know if you have any, again, I'm assuming rates will not consistently stay at this level, but you may fill us in on that too. So.
Well, thank you all for having me out this evening. Again, Paul Grieger with D.A. Davidson. We did run some schedules. You've had a chance to glance at them. Just as a base case, maybe we can talk about the $25 million option and then do my best to answer any questions around it. But I think it was already noted that that would be just $1.5 to $1.6 million of annual expected debt service. We're assuming when we ran those numbers, we were looking at the all-in cost of money being approximately 2.4% on a 20-year bond issue. I had a chat with my trading desk today just to see if we're still in the ballpark, and maybe we're off 6-7 basis points from that figure as of the June market. But as we're all seeing, the stock markets and bond markets are fairly volatile lately. So I feel pretty comfortable saying that if we're looking at a borrowing later in the year, it's my expectation that interest rates would be at or below 3%. Today we're at or below 2.5. My crystal ball is foggy, but looking ahead and doing a lot of capital planning with a lot of our governmental clients, we're comfortable that we're gonna be in the ballpark. Something strange can happen. I don't think these low rates are gonna stick around forever. And not to be flippant, but we've been talking about interest rates going up for a really long time. So it's easy to say rates are going to go up. I just don't know when it is. We've had really good success here refinancing bonds as they've become callable. And I think the district has done a really nice job managing its debt, and it's put you in good position to responsibly add debt if needed. So I do my very best to answer any questions if anybody has any for me.
So I guess the process, if and I think this is discussion item only, I think if the general consensus is to put a bond resolution on the next board agenda, which would be in August, if that were to succeed, talking to Paul, we would need to obviously get a conversation with the rating agency and go through that process, which we're familiar with and have done that. And so I think you're looking at selling bonds in the fall, early winter. Is that correct?
Yeah, just let me take 30 seconds to maybe walk through a skeleton of a timeline there. If that's what you asked us to do and the board approved the resolution authorizing the bond issue in August, we'd get to work with Mr. Winkler and his team to put together a good bond offering document. We call it a preliminary official statement. We'd ship that over to Standard & Poor's, who maintains your bond ratings, and they would do a credit evaluation. It's my expectation we'd probably have a meeting with them over the phone, maybe first part of September, hopefully have the rating in hand by mid-September, maybe the third week in September, and then we'd be in position that we could sell bonds pretty much right away if we felt pressure to do so, depending on what we all thought the then-current market conditions were looking like. But the rating then would be good easily for 60 days if we wanted to delay the sale into maybe November and then settle in December. So we'd have some flexibility, and I think we'd have some reports back for the board at that time, but we'd have a window there that we could plan for a successful sale and react to any negative or positive pressures in the marketplace.
Could you refresh my memory where our bond rating was and expected to go higher or maintain?
I would expect it to remain stable. I would expect AA rated bonds. I'm not a credit analyst, so I can't be held on record, of course. But you know, for quite a while, it was a AA minus, right? And then I lose track of time, but I think it was maybe within the last 3 years that we were upgraded. It might have been on the refunding in 2019. So, I mean, you're a very solid investment grade rating, AA.
makes our makes the job easier for our salespeople, to say the least. So.
Thank you. What relationship does the money supply have to the interest rates as the Treasury continues to print money? Is there a correlation? What kind of correlation does the Fed react with interest rates?
So that's always a difficult one to pin down in municipal bonds. But the more, you know, if there's, let's say we tie that to inflation, then as inflation happens, then interest rates can go up. We look at inflows of cash into the bond funds and outflows of cash away from the bond funds. That helps kind of gauge demand. And right now, the nominal interest rates are extremely low. So we go through periods where investors are buying bonds, maybe not because they want to, but because they have to, and it might be the type of business they are, like an insurance company has to plan for future claims. So they'll be buying bonds in most any market to plan for that. But to your point, there's two sides of that conversation out there right now. There's people expecting inflation to hit hard. There's others thinking maybe it's not going to be that big of a deal. We deal with what's right in front of us, and we deal with the facts we can manage, and we plan for the best. Not a great answer, because I don't have, again, that crystal ball, but I that's kind of where my comfort level is.
Any other questions, ladies and gentlemen?
Are we going to have anyone else speak to this topic?
Unless you have more questions. But
I have a question for Amanda. In some sort of relation to this, he brought up inflation, Amanda. And as you've looked at all of these appraisals that we've been doing from 2012 to 2016, in Sarpy County, we saw about a 4.9 countywide rate of inflation. And then from 16 to 20, it's gone from 4.9 to 10 to 12. And then last year, it appears to be about 14% from my judgment. Is that what you're seeing with the appraisals that we've been acquiring over there in Sarpy County? Have you had time to actually compare a few of those?
I haven't, and I should. I would almost say it's that or more. I mean, it seems like it's been pretty dramatic. And, of course, it depends a lot on exactly where you're at, you know, what the future zoning is of the land that you're buying, and, you know, if there's other development and other sales that have happened for specific reasons. You know, I think there's some things with schools that have jumped some prices for us that, you know, are more than inflation, you know, have some different impacts. But I'd be happy to go check that. But I would say it's, if not online, it would be even almost more than that.
So in relation to this topic, not only are we dealing with expected rise in interest rates from 2.5 northwards, but you're saying that a lot of the inflation in Sarpy County could exceed or has exceeded 14%. So
for the land. Mm-hmm.
For the land.
Well, if you look at 7, 12, and 19, they're in the three hottest development markets in the metro area. So Bennington, Elkhorn, and Greta. So they're not going down.
According to Case Shiller, we are the most stable real estate market in the country. And so if we're looking at the argument, as he brought up, whether the inflation is going to continue or if it's just transitory, it definitely is. If you look at the trend lines, it's going to be a continuous trend line, not transitory. And given the scarcity of our market, prices are proven out.
Okay. Any other questions? Anybody?
All right.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
Have a good evening.
Thank you, Amanda. Moving on to item 7, the review and recommendation FY22 budget draft on John Winkler.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I know we talked this for quite a bit during the budget workshop. So once again, the first draft of the budget, a lot of unknowns as far as the annual or the actual evaluation increases that will be forwarded by the counties.
Some budget assumptions we made is $500,000 for cash reserve. This is less than 1 month of operation for the district. And then we have $10.6 million is estimated for cash on hand as of June 30th. The total operating budget is projected to be $79.7 million. Property tax levy, 0.036490, which is the same as last year. Total property tax requirement, $28,531,095. And property valued at $100,000 would pay $36.49 a year. Again, as we talked about during the budget discussion, we're expecting valuations to come in close to 7%, similar to last year. However, we have made a commitment to keep our increase to 3.5%. And so any valuation increase would not impact this budget except lower the levy. If we get valuations of 7%, then we would request dropping the levy to 0.035296. Which is 16 out of 17 years. We've kept the millage the same or lower, 10 years lower, 6 years the same. And again, if depending on the bond discussion and vote in August, then that would be calculated in the budget. If that does not move forward, obviously this budget does not change. If it does, then only the debt service projected for fiscal year 2022 would change the budget. However, it would not affect our request or the levy that we are proposing. If there's any questions, I'd be happy to ask. I won't go through line item by line item. If there's any specific program or project question, let me know. Or the philosophy of how we kind of came with the numbers, let me know. But again, it's just a very consistent, methodical approach to getting our projects built and our programs continuing to be funded and run. So it's not very much different than last year. It's the same as the previous year. But again, we just continue to plug forward. And as you've seen by the agenda items, we look for money anywhere we can find it. If it's not with the sustainability fund, it's with cost shares, with other entities, interlocal agreements, federal funding, anywhere that we can look for additional funds, we try. So of a $79 million budget, $28 million is property taxes. So you can tell we bring in a lot of additional revenue from other sources and other partners, just so to say. So happy to answer anything that you might have.
I'd like to remind the board that August 10th, the FAL subcommittee will review the second draft of the FY22 budget. Public input meeting will be held on Thursday, August 12th, the board meeting, and the budget hearing adoption of the FY 2022 budget and set the tax levy will be done at the September 9th meeting. Any other comments?
Director, is the September meeting, is that going to be in Dakota County or is it down here yet?
I think we're going to have it here. One of the issues working with Terry and those is the USDA and NRCS still have restrictions on attendance or at offices, and so since that's a joint service center, we thought maybe it'd be best to give that time to work out until they open them up and then maybe go back up the following year. So,
thank you for that question, Jeff. Item 8, review and recommendation of FY 22 budget consultation, 1% resolution. John Winkler.
So this is voted on it every year, and I think this is probably a good year to kind of maybe dive in a little deeper. So the NRD, as well as some other governmental units, except for school districts, are restricted by a 2.5% restricted funds requirement. And so some of that you can have as exceptions as allowable growth and improvement to real property, things like that. So some of the things that are in the restricted lid, as you can see, the 2.5%, so you got district's insurance coverage. And so this year we had a 5% increase. We've historically had a 4% increase. Equipment and vehicles, salaries. Again, we had a 3.5%. It varies from there. Increase per year. Building maintenance, we talked about maintenance increases. Park and structure maintenance. So this is really an issue here too, because the more projects we build, then obviously we turn over the park area to an entity, but we always have the responsibility for the dam or and levees and things like that. So those maintenance requirements keep increasing on us as well. utilities, all those things. So we have a 2.5% lid requirement. Now, the board can vote to exceed that by 1%, so it's, we could go 3.5%. And so what that means is we can't, it's not that we spend an additional 1%. It doesn't give us 1% more taxing authority. It doesn't mean we'll raise our budget. What it does do is it gives Kerry and the board and the management flexibility to continue to meet those inflationary types of things. And so it's compounding. And so to do it 1 year, then not do it for 5 years, it helps, but it doesn't help that much. So to do it, to do it consistently helps with that flexibility. So worst case scenario, you get to a point where you're at your limit. So to do that, so you have to start, so maybe you don't give salary increases that year, or you cut back on maintenance that year, or you cut back on vehicle purchases that year, or you have to do something with the insurance coverage. So what it does is it puts you in a little bit of a bind behind the eight ball if you don't consistently try to keep up with those restricted funds. 2.5%, even in low inflation environment, was tough because you still have those increases and all those other things that apply to the lid. So this is something that, if you look at the voting record, it hasn't had a great track record. And I just think maybe it's a little misconception that if you vote for a 1% lid increase, that you're voting for a tax increase. That is not true. You are simply giving your organization the ability to respond and to be flexible in its spending. I guarantee you, if you bump it up 3.5%, this budget doesn't change one iota. But it does give us more room next year that we have to fit those things that we're paying for that are restricted. It gives us the ability to put those under the lid and still remain in compliance. So that is the true use of that 1% additional. Kerry, did I miss anything?
No, and like you said, we're not really worried about this year necessarily next year, but looking 5 to 10 years down the road, and suddenly find yourself caught up because of the decision you made 10 years ago. Every year we don't vote on that, we lose the compounding of the 1%. And I just think it's best to give ourselves as many options as possible. I'm an ABCD person.
Right.
Thank you, Kerry.
And so, again, this is being kind of, like I said, it's not a problem this year. It might not be a problem 4 years from now, but we have to be proactive enough to say it could be a problem down the road. And if it's not me, it's somebody else. And it's.
Can we get a motion on the floor?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Discussion from the public? Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bagley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you. Item 9, review the recommendation on account of 110% levies, attorney fees, 0103-4392-591. Martin Cleveland. Hello, Martin.
Hello again. Another 10% thing for me tonight. We have a budget item called maintenance of levies, attorney fees. So it's the work that Brent does for us on behalf of the various projects we have. And the budget this year is $28,000. And as of the June bill from Hushel Blackwell, which is roughly $2,000, will be over 110%. 110% is the limit which the manager is allowed to go up to without having board approval. So anything above 10% requires board approval. So basically for 0.6% over, we're coming to the board tonight for approval to exceed the budget for last year, fiscal year 21, which ended, of course, in June. But this is for payment that's going to occur in July. You're paying the money in July for a June expense. So staff would recommend that the board would allow this count to exceed 110% of the budget amount up to a maximum of $31,000. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
I'd like to move second. Again,
motion by
second.
Second by Fred.
Tim any Fred. Discussion? Public? Seeing none, roll call.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bagley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Item 10, renewed recommendation of Big Air Lake property transfer. Amanda, again.
Hey, I'm back. Curtis, could we go to the map, please? This is really just a small cleanup item. So this is at Big Elk Lake. We bought land in 2018 from the developer at the time, had a contract on the land, and we were working with them. We knew what we all intended because we knew 108th Street was going to be vacated at some point, and Sarpy County was saying as soon as Cornhusker Road is complete and Lincoln Road is complete, then they would vacate 108th Street. So we weren't terribly worried about it because we weren't sure when Cornhusker was going to be paved, but then it was, and they vacated 108th. When they do that, they just give each adjacent property half the road. And so it left a few little cleanup pieces for us. There's this little triangle here, one here, and then if you maybe scroll down, there's just one more tiny piece right here. So these are just little parts of 108th that we had gotten and we intend to quit claim back to the developer. And then if you'll scroll up, I'm sorry, Curtis, I'll quit after this. Those are the pieces that we intend to belong with them and we would transfer back to them. We didn't pay much attention to that because the important thing was our entrance road follows 108th into the park, and they had to quit claim us half of that road in order for the road to be ours, and they already did that. So we've got what was important to us, which was the access road into the park. So these are some cleanup quit claims. If you have any questions, be happy to answer that.
Recommendation.
Second. We have a motion and seconded. Any discussion? The general public? Seeing none, roll call.
Begley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
McCormick?
Yes.
Jefferson?
Yes. Item 11, recommendation of land rights for Elk Creek levee repairs, Roost property. We need to go into executive session on this, so can we get a motion to go into
executive session? Move to go into executive session.
Second.
Roll call.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
McCormick?
Yes.
Begley?
Aye.
Chairperson?
Yes. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We ask you all to exit. Okay. Come back into regular session. Roll call.
Conley?
Aye.
McCormick?
Yes.
Bickley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Would you read the recommendation in for the record, please?
Yes, sir. Recommendation of the subcommittee to recommend to the board of directors that the general manager be authorized to execute a purchase with Darlene L. Roost Revocable Trust dated December 29, 2000 for a not-to-exceed amount of $71,379 for an area containing 6.1 acres of land and temporary easement rights for the Elk Creek Levee Repair Project, subject to changes deemed necessary by the general manager and approval as to form by district's legal counsel.
Do we have a...
I'll move to accept the staff recommendation.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any comments from the board?
I had one. I just want to compliment Justin and General Manager Winkler for taking care of this. I think it's an outstanding way to handle this
problem.
Thank you. We appreciate it. We tried really hard.
Comment, Ted.
Yeah.
It was Justin's boyish charm.
honestly, I will say one thing about Mr. Roos. He was nothing but pleasant the whole time. There was never any, you know, kind of hatred comments or anything. It was just business. And it was actually, you know, it wouldn't be what you would expect to be doing working with a landowner in this situation. So I commend him as well to reasoning and listening with the NRD.
Thank you. Any public comment?
Just a quick question, legal. Do we have to vote separately to dismiss the previous motion last month or include it in this resolution? Can we incorporate by reference or by the action taken, assuming it passes?
Correct.
We'll dismiss the petition. We don't have to specifically say that.
You need an amended motion.
Yeah.
Because the action will vacate the petition.
Right? I amend my motion to include the
vacation and condemnation proceedings.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you.
We're good.
It's in there.
We.
Thank you.
Public comment? None. The amended motion?
To amend the
motion. Okay, yeah. The vote.
The original staff plus vacation of the, vacating the condemnation proceedings.
Roll call.
Begley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
McCormick?
Yes.
Chairperson?
Yes. Now, going back to the main motion.
I think we took care of both.
So that was a motion to
amend. Okay, that was a motion to amend. Now we need to approve another vote.
To make a motion that we accept staff recommendation.
As amended.
Second.
As amended.
As amended.
Discussion? Roll call.
We get there eventually.
Yeah. There you go.
Hopefully no more motions.
McCormick?
Yes.
Begley?
Aye.
Bradley?
Yes.
Conley?
Aye.
And Chairperson? Yes. That concludes our agenda for that one. We stand adjourned. Next.
You guys ready? Break, anybody? Call a meeting, the Personnel Legislation and Public Affairs Subcommittee meeting, July 6, 2021. The time is, I can't tell with the glare, 5:25 maybe?
Yeah.
A copy of the Open Meetings Act is posted on the back wall of the meeting room. With that, Corn Cole?
Bonnet.
Here.
Belford.
Here.
Jack.
Here.
McCormick.
Here.
Jefferson.
Here. Number four, adoption of agenda.
So moved.
Second.
Roll call move.
Thank you.
Roll call.
Belford.
Yes.
Jack.
Yes.
McCormick.
Yes.
Bonnet.
Yes.
Jefferson.
Yes. Item five, I have proof of publication of meeting notice, and this will become part of the permanent record. Item six, discussion on Executive Order 14008, not 10048, which is otherwise known as President Biden's 30 by 30 plan, Director Rich Teaser.
And thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm bringing this to you, the committee, and hopefully to the board, at the request of Dean Edson, as well as the Executive Committee of the NARB. President Biden, on January 27th, issued the order 14008, basically asking to conserve 30% of the nation's water and land by the year 2030. Now, this requires restricting land size, restricting a land size the size of Nebraska each year for the next 9 years, putting some regulations on either the land or the water, or it's twice the size of Texas. The thing that concerns the NARD is that we feel that we do a superior job, the best job in the nation, in fact, of regulating our waters. And the fact that 97% of the land in Nebraska is private, privately owned, it is a great concern that what does President Biden mean when he wants to conserve 30% of the land? You can read the executive order yourself, but basically what we're concerned about, and many of the directors were concerned about, the fact that if the government takes control of 30% of the water, possibly that water in our maybe Ogallala aquifer could be transferred possibly to the high plains, to the Colorado, to California. We don't know. There is no explanation on record of what the actual 30-30 plan is. And so for that reason, we are opposing it at this point. The Tri-Basin NRD immediately passed a motion to oppose it, and it's my understanding that there are 25 counties in the state that have already opposed it. And the NARD is asking, or the management or the executive committee is asking all the NRDs to oppose it when we go to our annual meeting in September. And so what we're asking that we adopt a resolution to, that this board adopt a resolution to oppose it also. Because it's just so vague, we have no idea what he's talking about. And, you know, we don't want to say, yeah, go ahead and do something and then have it come back and bite us in the butt. I mean, I'm sorry I can't be any more frank than that, but, or clear than that, but nobody knows what he means. It has not been explained. And so we're just taking, I know the governor has gone out and spoke at several locations in Nebraska opposing this, basically for those same reasons. And John, I don't know if you have any insight that I may have missed or something new. But
No, it's just that there's not a lot of details, and there's been a lot of speculation swirling, I guess, on both sides of the political spectrum. I mean, my first inclination is never trust what the federal government comes up with that isn't really specifically defined, but my biggest concern is that that this type of blowback on the word conservation will have an impact on what we've been doing for 50 years. So when we go and ask a landowner to participate in a conservation practice that we've done for forever and been highly successful, it will get lumped into the effort that all conservation is bad and all conservation is a government takeover, and so then we'll start losing those opportunities. Not that I'm a supporter of 30 by 30, but I'm a supporter of conservation, how we've been doing it and have been doing it for a long time. And so that's my only concern, and I don't have a recommendation for you. I mean, it's a political decision that you as a board can make if you want to be on record against the 30 by. I just think we need to clarify in any communication, if we do oppose it or don't, that we're supporters of conservation as it exists today, not permanent conservations. You know, ultimately, and that's an argument of the private property. If I want to put it in a permanent conservation, I can, right? But I think we just need to be clear that we are still supporters of that effort. And although you might not like this initiative by a certain administration, that needs to be clarified. But again, it's totally up to the elected folks to make that determination.
Director Brandon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not an expert or a spokesman for the Biden administration in the 30 by 30 effort that they're, you know, have announced, and if this passes tonight and then we move on to Thursday, I'll have more for the debate. But I would say at the moment, this, you know, from what I'm hearing, is it's much ado about nothing, and the Biden administration has made it clear time and time again they're not out to usurp or take people's property, their private property, their private land. That's not what their end goal was, and a lot of it is about conservation. Organizations like Ducks Unlimited, the Pheasant Group, they look to, you know, try to commandeer more and more and more and more property. Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, same way, for conservation and animals. But myself, I'll be against this particular resolution, all due respect to Director Teaser, and I just encourage the committee to not allow this to pass to Thursday night, but if it does, there probably will be, it'll come with some and I can't promise, not that I'll know anything, but the media and other people, it might make Papua Missouri NRD the laughing stock, but I don't know. Go ahead and we'll let it come out in the wash here. That's all I got to say.
Director Thompson.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, there's no resolution presented to the subcommittee. It's just discussion, so we're not going to vote on anything. However, if you read the executive order, I believe what Director Teaser is saying is that we would endorse this as a body because he says Pete Ricketts. I order all code agencies to take any necessary steps to resist and prevent the federal government attempt to usurp state authority as they implement the 30 by 30. And I'm kind of, as we're discussing, and certainly we need more discussion on it. Eventually, do you expect, Director Teaser, a resolution to that effect, maybe next month? Or
to your point, the Tri Basin has a resolution that was already passed by them that was used as the basis that's kind of being passed around to all the other NRDs. John, I believe we do have a copy of that.
We could get it. I mean, if we can turn it into a resolution, if there's interest. And so I put it for discussion because I want to see what the, you know, what's, and if we can't, we can modify it. And right. I don't think there's any timeline when you can oppose this. It's not like, but okay. We can put on the August agenda if we want our own.
Well, there's two ways to do it. Either have our own resolution,
right.
Or if it's going to be presented.
That's how it was presented. You could either use Tri-Basins or use your own, but they would like to see, you know, a resolution, a support statewide that we're, so we don't know what's.
There's two ways we can do it, present our own resolution or present the resolutions that are going to be presented at the Kearney Conference,
correct.
Of which you are representative. And we'd want to either pass or deny that to allow you to vote yes or no at Kearney, correct?
Correct.
So I'm thinking, that's either, it doesn't matter to me which resolution comes forward in this body, but it won't be tonight. It'll be August. It'll have to be September the latest.
Yes, September the latest.
Yeah. Point of order, if I may. Mr. Chairman and the General Chairman, there won't be any vote on this Thursday night.
Correct. Unless you want to give direction to either drop it or to draft a resolution type. We can pass for it.
I would caution.
I can't make a motion, but I would encourage you to have a resolution available ASAP.
Well, I think we need more discussion if I might finish. And I'm glad this body is nonpartisan elected officials. I certainly don't want to go down party line one way or another, but I think we need, especially being proud of Nebraska and what we do normally, more than any other state and union in our conservation efforts led by John Winkler and others, that perhaps the 30 by 30 doesn't really apply to us. So that your President Biden, let's invite him to the meeting and say, look, Nebraska's better than what you want, so...
I think it is noteworthy that 97% of the land in the state of Nebraska is privately owned.
97?
Yes.
Yeah, that's scary.
Director McCormick?
I think the resolution from the governor, our boss, says that he's ordered all agencies to oppose this, but I think we're way too early. It's not a hill I would like to die on. Let's see how this proceeds. If it gets any traction, how that goes, and absolutely at that point we could have a resolution or a show of support or whatever, but not at this point.
Yeah, at least by
there's nothing. It's still
September.
A moving target.
So the code agencies refer to state agencies like Game and Parks and DEE and Economic Development. We're not a code agency. We're like a county or a political subdivision.
Yeah,
okay.
We're
not a coach. Well, to his order, we are.
And not subordinate to the governor?
No. Well, yeah. It depends on perspective.
I don't know what his is.
Director Bonnet?
Just for discussion purposes, it might be noted that almost all counties, except for just a couple, have already voted to oppose the 30 by 30 plan in the state of Nebraska.
And Director Teaser, you said how many districts opposed it? Do you know?
There was no district that supported it at the last meeting.
Okay, all right.
Now, that does not mean, now, it hasn't been brought to every board yet, but at that time, every official representative like myself opposed it.
I can get, I'll get that number. When we put on the agenda, I'll get that number of who's, of the NRDs, who's passed it, who's not.
Okay.
I know a lot have discussed. I don't know the number of who's passed.
Well, on that same line, any code agencies within our jurisdiction, if they pass, would that be significant or not?
Well, a code agency would take their direction from the governor.
Right.
They would be bound by that.
So counties aren't a code agency
or political subdivision.
Code agencies are state.
Yeah, like Department of Economic Development. Right. Game of Parties.
Okay, thank you.
So if I may ask, Chairman Thompson, are we just, is that it? We finished discussion, or what are my choices here?
Well, there's no resolution, so we can...
You can either say you're done, or...
You're done, and we'll continue. You know, Thursday will be agenda.
Right. Okay. All right, any further comments? The only thing I'll say is this reminds me of something President Reagan said. The nine most terrifying words in the English language are that I am from the government and I'm here to help. So, if you know where I stand on this. Okay, and with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.